Welcome to the Honestly Carly podcast, the truth about staying strong, sane, and seen in midlife. This is the podcast where fitness, hormone health, and real life collide, hosted by me, Carly Corrigal, midlife PT and former lawyer. I'm here with honest conversations about what it actually takes to feel incredible over 40, because yep, that's still possible. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Honestly Carly podcast. I am still Carly Corrigal and I'm very excited because I have a special guest with me today, and it is a cracker. She is a cracker, I should say. I have got the fabulous Danielle Garfitt with me, who is a sports therapist extraordinaire of some 20 years experience. Danielle is a certified running coach as well as being a sports therapist. She's also a university lecturer. And she has a love of both running and strength. I would say she can actually explain this to you and the type of training she enjoys doing now, but she has a fantastic balance in her training. Danielle, over to you. Talk to me about your training, and then I want to talk about your experience and all the things that you're seeing in your practice.
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. This is such a privilege to be, like, am I your first guest?
You are my first guest. It's very exciting.
I've loved listening to the podcast so far, so it is really cool to be here. My training, so I did the London Marathon this year, and obviously with the build up to a marathon, it becomes very all consuming and very obviously run heavy. Since April, then my training slightly changed. Running will always be a significant part of my training. It's where I get the headspace. I just love being trail running, just being out in the woods. But I also have been doing a few competitions this year, so my training has taken on much more of a hybrid type of approach. So I do some high intensity kind of HIIT type sessions, as well as the strength work. But at the moment, I'm working towards Turf Games, which is in February. So there's a bit more of a lifting element to that. I love having a focus. So I love having a competition potentially in mind, so that I've got a focus for my training, because I think it's so easy to just scattergun it. My approach is to tend to work backwards from that competition. What does that competition require? I'll work backwards and then look at maybe blocks of training. So yeah, mixing it up really at the moment.
Brilliant. I love to hear this. And I also think it's so interesting because you put training plans together for people as well, don't you? And I do the same. And it's always that process of you start from where do you want to get to? And it's so different for all of us. I've got to have a goal. Otherwise, it becomes very kind of fragmented and I get dragged off. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll try a bit of this today. If I've got a goal, it provides that framework and that structure, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. And also with us all being bombarded so much on our social media feeds with things that you should be doing, and then people showing you things that they can do. And a lot of the time what people don't show you is how much bloody work goes into them being able to achieve that one thing. Like, I've had a bit of a thing of pull-ups recently, and that is something, it being able to do a pull-up will massively help some of the skills that I need to do in the next comp. So that's absolutely something that I really want to do. But you then see people doing lots of other things, or you hear on podcasts people saying you should be able to do 12 press-ups. You should be able to hang from a bar for, you know, a minute of every year of your life. Not that, but so it's so easy to become just so distracted with these other pulls and yeah, like I say, not really making any progress, or even being able to see what works for you. Like, if you don't stick to something, you just can't say what is working for you, because you've just been flitting around with all this different type of training. And that's a big thing, I think, for women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to come on to that consistency point and the importance of doing the small stuff as well, because I know you're really big on this. But I think that's so true. And actually, I think it's really refreshing to have these conversations, and you are an expert in what you do, no doubt about it. And I think people might look from the outside at people who are experts in what they do and go, it's okay for you. But we have our challenges, right? We might have the knowledge there, but actually implementation, actually doing all the stuff in practice, it has the same challenges that it does for anybody, really. It doesn't mean you sort of short circuit that element of your training at all.
No, I don't think so. I think we all have challenges, and it's about arming yourself with the knowledge of those obstacles in order to overcome them. And I suppose perhaps what people feel like when they say it's easy for you is there is an element of knowledge. So therefore, you can be a bit more objective with some of those obstacles that come up, like pain, to know whether do we push through that? Do we keep going? Do we give it a rest day? And so there are things in that regard that are easier, but I'm still a woman and still going through those same sorts of mood changes and joint aches and pains, and all of that that comes up for everybody is still the same. So it's still about overcoming those. And I do think by keeping your training consistent, that's that one area that you can rule out perhaps as being a problem. But hopefully with that sort of knowledge part, that's what you absolutely are trying to do. And hopefully I can bring a little bit of that today, is to impart some of that knowledge. So knowledge is power, isn't it? It's cliche, yeah. But it's, and then actually we can get rid of some of those obstacles that are coming up for people.
Definitely. So I want to really kind of dive into your experience in clinic, because you have heaps of it and this is your bread and butter, isn't it? And what I tend to see as well, I get so many women talking to me around niggles. And it's not always, I say niggles because it's not always people saying, I've got an injury. I think it's that slight grey area. And there definitely seems to be an upswing for whatever reason. And I really want to talk about this and whether it is a thing in midlife. But I certainly see women over 40 coming to work with me and saying, I've got this knee niggle or this niggly shoulder or this niggly back. And I'm not sure whether it's an injury. I haven't really seen anyone about it. I've had it for a really long time. So talk to me about that.
So I'll go personally first. I would say that I'm 42. There are definitely changes happening for me personally. And I sometimes go through a period where you wake up in the morning and you just think, before you touch your feet on the ground, what's going to hurt today? Like, it is, that's new. Excellent. And your first thought is to think about what you did yesterday. What was it that I did yesterday that's created that? Or even with clients that I will see in clinic, they'll say something about the way that they slept. Like, so it's natural for us to kind of think about what have we just done very recently that's created this pain. So I tend to try in clinic to get people to look a little bit further back than that, because your body is pretty incredible at adapting. So therefore, if there is anything going on with training, with your exercise, it's not going to show up generally that quickly. And if it does show up, if it's something that is completely new, how quickly does it disappear as well? So these are all factors that contribute towards, what is it? What is the problem? What's actually going on? So I would say in clinic, I don't see a major difference between men and women with, so if I look at my overall demographic of people that I see, it's a fairly even split. We do know from an evidence perspective that women do suffer. There is a higher prevalence of certain injuries within the female population, but that sort of is kind of true throughout life. And then in later in life, we do see more tendon-based issues, particularly around the shoulder and around the hip, kind of a gluteal tendinopathy versus a sort of lying on the hip kind of pain. And we do see a bit more knees. I wouldn't necessarily say that I see that particularly in clinic. And there might be various reasons for that, in the sense that we have to start trying to differentiate between these aches and pains and injuries. And exactly what you were just saying is that you have a lot of women that say, oh, I'm just like, kind of got this niggle and I'm not sure what it is. And I'm not sure what to do about it. And I do think that is incredibly difficult, but we have to remember there are so, so many factors at play here. So when I'm dealing with people in clinic, I probably wouldn't treat men and women differently. So we're kind of looking at these injuries and these pains, and ultimately we're looking for past history. We are looking through an age perspective, because there are injuries that do come up more commonly with age. So it's a big piecing of all of the bits of the puzzle together for everybody. And it might mean that for women entering into kind of perimenopause time, there is an extra factor to consider. But we don't have the evidence to say that that is a cause of that particular injury. We do know that aches and pains in the joints, and I'm not dismissing aches and pains as a very significant perimenopause symptom for some people. But what we do know is that there isn't actually tissue damage associated mm-hmm. with those particular or aches and pains that people are reporting. So therefore, it's just another piece of the puzzle, really, that we are trying to bring lots of aspects together to say, what are your risk factors? What's creating this pain for you? And then that is how we go about then treating it. Making hormone changes the forefront, I think, removes a lot of our control over it. And we don't have the evidence to suggest that that is the main factor and the main part at play, really.
I love that. I love your approach, but having worked with Danielle for a number of years, the thing I love about Danielle is the agency that she gives the client she sees. Because actually, I think if we are very fatalistic about things and we say, oh, we reach midlife, so inevitably you're just going to be an achy old hag. Get used to it. Yeah. It takes away that feeling of power that's so important, and that control and that agency over your own body, because you're so right. It's about this jigsaw puzzle effect, isn't it? And could it be, and I'm just hypothesizing here and I'd love to know your thoughts, but could it be with women, not only might we not be seeking out that professional help when we need to, because, and we'll talk about this perhaps, pain perception or just a very ingrained, oh, I'm just going to put up with it because it's not that bad. So is it that maybe a lack of prevalence isn't that it isn't there? It's just because the threshold is greater for women to seek the help. But also, aside from the hormonal discussion, we are this patchwork quilt of everything we've done before. And if throughout our whole lifetime, we are perhaps more prone to certain injuries, it's a compounding effect. So we reach a certain point and we've accumulated all of these different things throughout our lifespan, whether that, and also we're factoring in, you know, women that have given birth, that the whole body effect that being, you know, pregnant and postpartum has on our bodies. So I'm wondering whether there's just so much there, isn't there, to kind of go on?
There is a lot to unpick. And I think, I that's what I love about my job so much. Mm. I love Me being too. A detective and I love putting pieces of the puzzle together for people. And I think it's never, ever, ever a one size fits all approach. So the reasons for injury, for pain, is so, so multifaceted. I think just to pick up on your prevalence point, I think you're absolutely right in that people are not necessarily seeking support for aches and pains. I do see it because I do work with a lot of women. So I am working with people with injuries, and then people are coming in and going, oh, this hurts now and this hurts, but I think it'll be okay. I think the big thing that we get from these aches and pains that we know are a symptom of perimenopause, even if we don't necessarily know brilliantly why, is a change in your, and you touched on it there, pain perception. Everybody gets injuries at different points. If you're training, you're going to get something that's going to come up. That's completely normal. We can deal with that. That's absolutely fine. But when you're also dealing with that, perhaps alongside these different aches and pains, it's very difficult to differentiate them in your mind. It's very, now this is broken, now this hurts. And I do see that type of feeling when people come in, and automatically I go, okay, we need to stop here and we need to pick this apart, because this is changing your mindset, and a change in mindset will change pain perception, and it will, we have absolute evidence on this, change your recovery timelines.
Wow.
A positive attitude, a positive mood, an upbeat, definitely we know improves how quickly we get better. So we've got all these different aches and pains and lots of things going on in the background. And I know you've touched upon it in other podcasts as well before, where we're at a stage in life where work, career stresses are quite high. We might have young children. We might have old parents that all also are starting to require a little bit more from us. You know, the times at the moment that we live in, people are under quite a lot of stress. So you're adding in to that aches and pains and this injury, and everything just very much gets on top of you and has an impact upon mood, anxiety levels. And that's something that we definitely need to control, because it has a huge perception, a huge impact on pain perception, and it has a huge impact on recovery times. I don't want to go crazy on the science, because you know, so just stop me if I am with this whole pain thing. But I think it's important. I think a really useful piece of knowledge for people when it comes to these aches and pains and injuries is about where pain comes from. And this could be a complete podcast entirely in itself. Pain is an output generated by your brain. So all of the tissues within your body are creating nerve stimulation, and that nerve stimulation travels up to your brain. And at that point, your brain does a whole load of analysis very, very quickly. And it starts to say, have we been in this position before? And what was the outcome? If it was negative, cool, I've added that in. Where is this stimulus coming from? It's coming from that knee, or the left side. Is always an area of your body that if it's something's going to hurt, it will be on that side, or it will be that knee. So the brain goes, well, is that a problem? And it consults with other areas of the brain, and it goes, yes, it's a problem. It's been a problem for our whole life, and it stops us from doing exercise. Right, cool, noted that down. So then it's kind of saying, well, how also are we feeling at the moment? What are our cortisol levels like? Are we really super busy? And it's bringing together all of this information, and then it produces the output, which is pain. So the degree of pain can change dependent on all of those factors that I've just discussed. So that's when I'm seeing women, particularly in clinic, coming in, but you know, the physiology works for both men and women. But when these aches and pains are then arising, it's so hard to pick them apart. So then you're going, oh, it's just another thing. And the mood changes, the pain perception increases. So the knock-on effect of that is often reduced activity. And that's something that I think is probably our biggest player in all of this, that contributes then to the actual injury happening. So where we say in all these aches and pains, there's nothing under MRI findings that we could see with these aches and pains. There's not tissue damage. There's not these things. There's not an obvious source for them. That's not to say they're not there, because that's a lot of what I deal with in clinic, because our brain is what produces that pain. But then when we compound it with all of these other things, we then change our mood, our pain perception increases, our time for recovery increases. So our time from the training sessions we are doing, it might take longer for recovery to take place. And that's another thing that is added to the age. As you get older, recovery slows down, cell turnover slows down, we know that. So we've just got lots of these factors all coming together, and what they kind of then end up merging into is lack of activity, or back to our original point, inconsistent activity. And therefore, these injuries that I see that occur because of a lack of strength, because of you've done too much too soon, because there's been these peaks and troughs in training, they're all really common causes of injury. It's just the background factors that have changed that we absolutely have to pick apart, which may well be there are more factors for women in midlife, but we just, these more obstacles to overcome. But the crux of it come down to consistency of training, and obviously what we'll probably come on to, I'm sure, is our strength training as well.
I find that fascinating, and I know we've had these conversations before, but every time I hear you speak about it, a little bit more kind of goes into my brain. And this idea that it is this feedback loop constantly with your body, and thinking about pain in a very different way rather than something that just happens to us is something that, it's not something we, let's be clear, it's, we're not saying for a second it's all in your head. That's absolutely not what you're saying. But it is something that we have the power to control, and we have the power to see how we respond to that. And this is so classic to what I see. You know, I might get a client come to me and say, Carly, I really want to do your classes, really want to do your HIIT classes, but I haven't done any high impact work for years because I've got a glitchy left knee. And every time I try and jump or bounce or run on it, it's glitching. And, you know, I go back and I'd say to her, well, you know, what is there something there in your past? Have you had a specific knee injury? No, it's just been dodgy probably since I had kids. And then I haven't really used it because it hurts. And even on walks now, it hurts. And it's exactly what you describe. It's this kind of shrinking of your world around exercise, this, you know, constriction in what you feel safe to do because of that pain. And obviously, if it's something that I can see, sometimes there's a glaringly obvious injury, in which case that's beyond my sphere of competence. That's what I'm referring to you. But if it's I'm often just trying to kind of open up that world for that woman and saying, okay, well, cool. Let's start and introduce a little tiny bit of mobility work. Let's try and get you moving through those movement patterns. Then let's add in a little bit of impact. Is it as bad as you think it's going to be? You know, it doesn't sound like there's anything serious going on there. So what will it tolerate? And it's this almost like this nudging up of the threshold.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's getting to that point, I think, and knowing when you can do that. And there's a lot of fear. And of course, then you've got that fear feeding into your pain response. It's crazy, isn't it, how this can kind of spiral?
It really is. And I think another part, just referring back to what I said at the early on about perhaps how people see us as having it easier, it's easier because perhaps they do have that knowledge there, and that's what we want to give away, is to actually to keep people exercising. Because I think a big part of what I do in clinic is try to educate people on progression of exercise, where again we're seeing all these things, people doing all these things, they're doing a pull-up, they're doing press-ups, so she can do 12 press-ups, I'm going to do a press-up. And I'm like, well, okay, what about if we lay you on your back and do some chest press, bench press exercises with 5 kilos in each hand, because that's not probably, I don't know, 3/4 of your body weight.
Yeah.
So we start there, because my shoulder hurts when I do a press up. Okay, cool. Well, that's fine. Let's regress from that, with the understanding though that we're going to need the consistency from you to progress from that. And I think that's where we get a stuck a lot of the time, is not having perhaps the knowledge of progressions and regressions. We do something, it hurts, so we either do two things. We regress the exercise, which is great, that's the perfect thing to do, or we stop altogether. So a press-up hurts. It hurts when I do it on my knees, so I stop doing it. Okay, great. There must be more regressions that we can make for you. If we don't need to do the whole assessment on the shoulder, and we don't think there's necessarily a major injury there that needs all this assessment, can we regress it a little bit further? Great, we can. Right, we're going to need your consistency now, because we still want to move forward towards that press up. So once we've got you doing 5 kilos on your back with some dumbbells, we can get you doing 8s and we can get you doing 10s. And then probably when we think, oh, you know, we can probably get you on your knees now to do a press up. And then we spend a little bit of time there, and then we can get you fully into that plank position, full press up. Fantastic. But what we do see generally is my shoulder hurts to do a press up. I stop doing it until the shoulder doesn't hurt anymore. And then I try and do a press up again and it still hurts. So I see a lot of people that play sport and will come and say, I can't play tennis. And I go, okay, what specifically do you mean by that? Like, you can't play any of it. You can't do forehand. You can't do backhand. You can't do a serve. You can't volley. You can't just have an easy rally. Oh no, I can't play a match. Right. Okay. So what can we actually do before the match? How can we break that down into lots of different components so that you don't just go, can't play, gonna have 6 months off, come back, still can't play. And all of these, every time we try and challenge the body too much, and it's, in my mind, it's an obvious too much. It's not for some people. We need to understand there are so many regressions we can make. But every time we do that, we reinforce to your brain, there's a problem with my shoulder.
Yeah.
And that just carries on then for years. And it's totally ingrained to the point where people will reach into the cupboard with a different arm. And then we stop using that arm altogether for some areas of life. And you don't even realize that that's happening. And what you are thinking is, it's healing. I'm not using it, it's healing. So now I'm going to go do a press up again. And it's going to go, well, I'm weaker than I was the last time you tried to do a press up. So I think whilst we both bang on about consistency quite a lot, hopefully it's useful for people to understand why that consistency is so needed. We need those tissues to learn, to adapt, to change, to strengthen, to grow, to tolerate more. Your nervous system is designed to protect you. So it will get very highly stressed if something new occurs. So often when you're doing that press up, there's nothing wrong with your shoulder. A lot of the time it's the nervous system around there that's stimulated because it goes, whoa, this is new. Hang on. Let's send that signal up to the brain. This is a bit different. What's going on? And your brain goes, sorry, which shoulder? Left. Oh, that's agony. Tell her that's agony.
No, abort mission. Abort.
Abort. If the same sensation, if the same stimulus came to the other side, the brain would probably have a different, slightly different response. Yeah. And we're not talking tissue damage, we're talking a change in perception.
Yeah.
So that consistency also talks to your nervous system to say, chill out. We're good here. Are we good here? Yeah, we're good here. Can we push this on a bit more? Oh, you're pushing me, but I think we're okay. So we're sitting below that threshold all the time and we're just asking to push it up. Every time you have a break from that training, a substantial time off, that threshold just lowers slightly. So every time you come back in, there's a real...
It's so interesting, isn't it? And I can hear the voices of some of my clients. I can hear the voices of myself, my own brain chatter and what you're saying. And just anecdotally, and this is a classic midlife one. So on holiday this summer, we hired bicycles. I have the shortest legs in my whole family. Didn't really adjust the saddle. Went to stop. And also they were bikes where you don't have brakes. You have to pedal backwards to stop it. And I had to stop really suddenly. Talk about throwing all the things into the mix here. I had to stop really suddenly and I had to put my foot down and push backwards at the same time. And I think I probably just sustained a little tweak to my hip flexor, like nothing major. I knew when I did it, I winced. I thought, oh, that's sore. But it has been a period of like several months since then where I've noticed it in random things. And it's that classic, like you said, right at the top of the conversation, getting out of bed in the morning, you know, I've rolled over too quickly and gone, well, that's the hip flexor. And immediately I have to catch myself and go, Carly, this is not an injury.
Yeah, yeah.
This is just a little tweak. It's something that's a little bit unhappy because of something you did a few months ago. And it's taken a long while, and it would have been very easy to be a bit depressed about that and going, well, Christ, I mean, it takes me 3 months after getting off a bike to start feeling my hip. But I know what it is. I've got that knowledge. And again, maybe that is the expert's blessing here. I know that it's nothing serious. It will right itself, but it needs me to keep testing it. And it needed me to keep just pushing it up that little bit every time, just making sure we were always keeping that load and that little nervous system nudge each and every time.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say without hopefully completely removing any sort of mystique on my profession and or giving away all of my secrets here, but a lot of the time that is rehab. I know that you're okay. I know that there's either, if there's tissue damage, it's minor. And I am very, very confident in your body's ability to heal itself. Yes, we know it may take a little longer as we get a bit older. We have to be a little bit more patient. I know that it will heal itself. So what can I give you to do whilst it's doing that, to make sure when you come out the other side, you're still operating normally, you're still moving normally, you're still strong through all the muscles that are not impacted by it, and you can then pick up where you left off, which is ultimately what it sounds like you exactly what you did. So having that bit of knowledge, but ultimately that is what we're here for too, for other people, is to say, okay, this is sore at the moment. Don't take that into that range of motion. Don't, you know, when things are uncomfortable, the big thing, I do see this probably more with women, is they want to stretch it out.
I want to come on to stretching.
And I'm like, just leave it. Just let it do its thing. But you know what? That's one tiny piece of your hip that's sore. There's so much else we can do and so much else we need to do, because otherwise you're going to lose strength in that area. You're going to lose the movement patterns that you've built up. And the biggest thing is that you lose confidence. So if I can just show you some of the exercises that you can still do, and big thing I always try to do is say, tell me what you already do. You can do that regression. But let's just keep you doing everything that you are currently doing with a few tweaks. And I try to give that as rules. So I try to say your hip doesn't really want to go into that full range of motion right now. So anything that you commonly do that takes it into that range of motion, let's just like reduce the range for a bit. And that tends to work a lot better than kind of shaking up people's training too much. I have to be mindful of when that does need to happen. If there's an injury that we can't do that with, we need to come off feet, for example, etc. But for the most part, it is about, like you say, it's just finding that threshold, finding what you can still do, and continue to do so. Because sometimes as well, with some of these aches and pains, they don't have a tissue origin. There isn't tissue damage going on there. Sometimes they actually feel better after you've done something. And there's a huge amount of physiology we could go into kind of about that. But also just reflecting on what we talked about with pain perception, we get an endorphin hit. We do something we enjoy and we finish it feeling proud of ourselves. That increase in mood reduces our perception of pain. So we're just ticking away at trying to break that kind of cycle and keep people confident.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because it's so true, actually. And then you feel that it's that confidence, isn't it? Because you're like, actually, that was actually fine.
Yeah.
And I feel really good. Yeah. and it'll be okay for next time. So when we lead into that activity the next time round, you've already got your brain going, are we cool? And your brain's going, yeah, well, I mean, we were good last time, so there's no reason to think we won't be this time. I want to sort of circle back onto something that you mentioned, because you mentioned the S word, stretching. Now, I know a lot of what you do, what we talk about, is not just rehabbing people, it's the prehab. Okay. Now, I get this, and I'm sure you do. How many people come to you, and when they're talking to you about their aches and their pains and their issues, they say, and it's probably because I'm not stretching enough. Yep. Do they lead with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Frequently. So many parts to unpick of stretching. I just want to start with saying, when we're talking about stretching, I generally am talking about static holding kind of stretches. I'm a big mobility fan. I will do, a bit of a sun salutation type, you know, with like the lunge and the leg through. And so mobility, taking the joints through their range of motion regularly. I say regularly, what do I use it for? Mostly for a warm up or to feel better. Like, and that's where I would also put static stretching. If you feel better having done some, I don't have an issue with that. But that's probably where I would also stop. Its benefits are in how it's made you feel, and the benefits are going to be relatively quick, because they're quick to be had and they're quick to be lost. So unless you are spending, and there is a little bit of research on this, but this isn't generally what people mean anyway, but unless you're spending a significant period of time in a position, it is not making one iota change to your range of motion or your length of your muscles. So I guess that maybe my first point is for people that come and some say this is here because I've not been stretching, and then others will say, I think if I stretch more it will go. And I'm like, well, does it? Because generally the answer to that is actually no, it hasn't. And I actually also think we need to be quite objective with this and say, has it improved it? And part of my reason for wanting to really get into that is because of the conditions that we know are more prevalent in women, and actually think that stretching is also more prevalent in women. So the conditions that I'm seeing don't like to be stretched. Your tendons are not a big fan of being stretched. Bursitis type injuries are not a fan of that stretch, that increase in pressure and that tension on them in that way. So therefore, if stretching, static stretching, makes you feel better, you crack on, I'm great with that. If it's not, I don't see any reason then to be doing it. Yeah. We need to bark up a different tree at that point. I'm not sure where stretching got this sort of holy grail as the thing that we need to be doing in order to cure or prevent. You know, it's just not that powerful. I think I would rarely give stretching as a rehab exercise. And the only time I would is where I genuinely see a deficit in range of motion or muscular length. And it would always be alongside making the muscle work through the range of motion, as with weights, as well as some of that stretching.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the impact that I think people think that it does.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Yeah. I totally agree with everything that you've said based on my experience of working with women for many years. And with myself, sometimes you do just, you know, you get up out of the bed in the morning and it is a bit of a reflex. You think, oh, I'm just going to, you know, feels really nice. Yeah. And it's a nice feeling. But I think we associate that nice feeling of kind of opening up, of lengthening. We want to get to that point. And so we maybe we associate the stretch as being the place, the thing that's going to get us there.
Yeah.
But we know, you and I know, this is not what is going to get you to that place. Yeah. And I'm exactly the same. I just don't stretch. I don't. It's not something I do. I do a heap of mobility work. Every strength class I do, every HIIT class I do, I work on getting into my range of movement and my sort of maximum range for that day, which could vary. You know, some days you're just a little bit tighter than others. But standalone stretches or coming in from a run and stretching, absolutely not. Not a thing for me, not something I would ever do. But it's persistent. It always comes up.
It does. I don't think it's ever.
Where are the stretches? Why am I not doing stretches, Carly?
And I think to pick up on a word that you just said there as possibly the big origin for where stretching is just never going to die is the word tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we use the term tight to describe a lot of different sensations. And I mean sensations. So I think what would be useful for people to understand is that when you say something feels tight, it is a sensation. Because 9 times out of 10, that muscle won't be tight in the sense of it being short. It feels tight. If I could ask for one thing out of my whole career, it would be for people to replace the word tight with tired. And okay. I think a lot of the time when I say that to people, they go, oh yeah, it probably could, like, it could also feel tired. Like, it's only a description. It's only a word that you're using to describe a sensation. So if I say tired, you go, oh yeah, actually could feel quite tired too. So tell me, if you're describing it as tight, would your action be different to if you described it as tired? 100% it would. Obviously, within the English language, we have tight and stretch as opposing.
Yeah, they're antonyms. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you've described something as tight. So your natural thing to want to do is to stretch it. If I described it as tired, you'd leave it the hell alone and let it just heal and do its own thing.
Do its own sweet thing.
So, and I mean, that's not necessarily a reason to rest it per se. I guess I'm going to have to go a bit sciencey again. But with the sensations that we're getting from our muscles, they're coming from our nervous system. Your nervous system is being stimulated by something within that muscle tissue, and it's coming up to the brain, and your brain is going, tight. Why are those nerves being stimulated in that way? Is the muscle genuinely tired? Or does it, in a sense, almost need a bit of a system reset? If you contract the muscle, it enables then that nervous system is then having to fire up some of those motor units, some of those muscle fibers within there, and it gives that almost system reset of these nerves are not continuously being stimulated in that same way. So yeah, I would say, just from, if nothing else, from this part of the conversation, is I just would like people, when they think something feels tight, just to challenge themselves with that word, to think, could it, that sensation, actually be described in a different way? And therefore, would my actions perhaps be slightly different, in that I don't need to lay stretching it all the time?
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I am with you. I think we need placards. I think we need to walk the streets with tired, not tight.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. Danielle, this has been just Knowledge Bomb Central. Thank you so much. I've absolutely loved. I mean, there's so many different tangents I want to go on. I'm literally sitting on my hands. I'm going to go and write a load of notes for a part 2. Thank you so much.
It's always great chatting to you.
I know.
And for the listeners' sake, we have to stop at some point.
Me too. I know there are going to be people listening to this who are going to want to know where to find you and to know how they can work with you. And I will put it all in the show notes. But do you want to just tell them briefly what you've got lined up for 2026? And where they can find you.
So I'm DS Sports Therapy. So on Instagram, Facebook, you will find me under that handle, DS Sports Therapy. Next, 2026 is a big running focus. As you mentioned at the start, I'm a running coach as well. And whilst I am a massive advocate for strength training within midlife, I'm also a big advocate for the running community, for them to be doing strength training as well. So the benefits there, two communities that often strength training isn't a big mm-hmm. aspect of what they do and where their focus is. So I'm trying to kind of merge that together. Spring marathons tends to be quite a big goal for a lot of runners. So I'm working with already working with a few runners where we look at their strength training, we're looking at their run program. I'm either writing that for them or I'm tweaking existing programs according to assessments that we've done, previous injuries that they've had, life coming up.
Yeah.
The beginning of next year will be quite big at working with a lot of marathon runners and getting them to the start line injury free. So I would love to hear from anybody that is tackling that, or even half marathon distance as well. It's a significant distance, as you know. There's a lot of aspects to pull together, and I really enjoy kind of looking holistically for people at all of those different areas.
Yeah, brilliant. And Danielle will not be writing a whole program of stretching for anyone. Neither will I.
If you would like to run the spring marathon and not stretch once,
then, she's your woman.
Come this way. That's not to say you're going to be let off the hook.
It's not like you're not going to be doing anything else. Danielle, that's fabulous. Thank you so much again for coming on the pod. I will put all of Danielle's details in the show notes. Looking forward to more conversations.
Thank you for having me. Yes, it would be lovely.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Honestly Carly. If you love today's chat, then why not share it with a friend? Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you're feeling really kind, leave a 5-star review. I'll see you next time for more honest chat and science-backed strategy for feeling strong, confident, and capable in midlife. Have a great week.